Gentlemen, welcome to Division 5 of the Colorado Court of Appeals. We're happy to have you here today. We have two matters on the 130 docket. The first is the Treadwell against Village Homes case. I assume counsel seated at council table are here on that case. And the second matter is Silva against Wilcox. Our counsel here for the Silva and Wilcox case. Right. You've received information sheets that give you some pointers on the arguments today. We have read the briefs. We're familiar with the background facts. At least one of us has been through the record. So if that helps you streamline your presentation, so be it. You have 15 minutes aside, and the yellow light comes on when 5 minutes are remaining to help you plan a rebuttal if necessary. And with that information, I would ask the ladies and gentlemen and counsel to turn off any kind of pagers or cell phones so we're not interrupted during the arguments. And with that request, counsel, you may begin.
Good afternoon. My name is Marcia Piccone. Together with me at council table is Mike Alper and Christina Valerio. May it please the court. Colorado law favors both the freedom to contract and arbitration. This case is about the right of parties to enter into a contract freely before a dispute arises and to determine how that dispute is going to be conducted. It is well established that the parties have the right to contract freely. This includes the right to agree to a specific procedure for the resolution of disputes. It also includes, the right to limit or to modify statutory rights and the right to determine how, if in an arbitration, attorney's fees and costs shall be allocated. The contracting parties' ability to modify statutory rights by a private agreement comes from Colorado's recognition of the importance of the liberty to contract. The function of the courts is to maintain and enforce those contracts. When a party enters into an arbitration agreement, that party has some predictability as to how that dispute is going to be resolved. Parties need confidence that those agreements will be enforced, and that the law is clear that the hallmark of arbitration is the pre-dispute arbitration agreement. It's that agreement that defines and limits the arbitrator's powers. The arbitrator here exceeded her authority when she awarded attorney's fees and all of the costs to the homeowners outside the terms of the agreement. Absent a finding of egregious conduct, the agreement provided that each party were to pay their own costs and attorney's fees. And in the only circumstance in which the arbitrator had the ability to award attorney's fees was with a showing of egregious conduct.
Ms. Piccone, if I can ask you on a couple of clarification questions first. With respect to the standard of review, am I correct that this court reviews de novo the arbitration agreement to decide whether the arbitrator was in or outside?
That is correct, and I believe both parties agree on that with regard to the interpretation of the contract. Yes, Your Honor.
All right, and so we don't have to provide, let's assume the arbitrator, we can say implicitly, was finding she could award fees under the CCPA. We don't have to defer to that, is that correct?
That is correct.
And would I also be correct that your argument here is that the language of the arbitration clause is unambiguous?
The argument is that, yes, Your Honor, you're correct. Our argument is that the language of that arbitration agreement is clear. There was never any determination or argument that it was ambiguous, and no suggestion by the arbitrator in her award that was an issue for her to decide.
Right, and I pause. I won't monopolize all your time, I promise. But what if you had a case where the sole damages were attorney's fees? Take, for example, an abusive process claim. is it, would it still be your position that under this clause, you can only award fees if there was a finding of egregious conduct? Did my question make sense?
I think so. I'll do my best.
Let me make sure. Say, obviously, your colleagues over here say the under the CCPA, fees are part of the damages. Let's take, and I recognize you may disagree with that, but let's take a hypothetical where the only damages were fees, like an easy one is abusive process claim. Somebody then sues for the, I should not have been brought into this case, sues for abusive process for to get their attorney's fees back. You could, hypothetically, you could have gotten into some sort of dispute with your colleagues about that. How does that fit with this arbitration clause? Do you have to find, where the only damages are attorney's fees, do you have to find egregious conduct?
I would answer that question with yes, you do need to find egregious conduct for the award of attorney's fees. And whether those attorney's fees are classified as damages or as the homeowners did, as costs, doesn't matter under the facts of this case, this contract, and the terms of this agreement. We need to look at the agreement and what it said regarding the award of attorney's fees and how that was done in this instance. The arbitrator made no suggestion that she was awarding fees under anything other than the CCPA. And even despite urging by the homeowners that she should make the finding of egregious conduct, she did not do so.
Ms. Piconi, I have a bit of a different question on that same subject.
Okay.
Is the arbitrator bound to make findings of egregious conduct, or should we be in a position of assuming that the award is based appropriately on egregious conduct?
I think in this instance, with the wording of that arbitration agreement and with the fact that the arbitrator really made no bones about the fact that she was awarding it under the CCPA, yes, there did need to be a showing and a finding by the arbitrator of egregious conduct.
Well, Counsel, you're adding the word finding. The paragraph 19 says showing.
That is correct.
Law that requires a finding, or could the arbitrator simply say, I award $300,000 in fees, and would that be exceeding her jurisdiction?
Yes, in this case it would, without the showing of egregious conduct.
But we assume there was a showing. I mean, you're saying there has to be a showing and a finding. The way I read paragraph 19, it says a showing. So if the arbitrator simply said, I award $300,000 in attorney fees, the arbitrator had the jurisdiction under paragraph 19 to determine attorney fees. You're saying that there has to be a finding. I'm not aware of any case law that requires an explicit finding for it to be not exceeding her jurisdiction.
What needs to happen here, though, when you're looking at that, Your Honor, is that egregious conduct, the attorney's fees, the parties entered into this agreement saying, we're going to pay our own attorney's fees, absent a showing of egregious conduct. And without that showing, the arbitrator was acting outside of the bounds of her authority to award attorney's fees, because in this instance she did not award. She made a statement that she was awarding pursuant to the CCPA. The homeowners also urged her, knowing that there needed to be egregious conduct in order for an award of attorney's fees to be within the scope of the agreement, to make the award because of egregious conduct. She did not do so.
What if she simply said, you're saying pursuant to the CCPA? I think one time she cited the statute, then in
firm
that she cited the CCPA.
Yes, she did.
What if she just said, I award attorney fees, period?
I think the same result. I think she was acting outside of the bounds of the agreement because the agreement required a specific type of action in order for attorney's fees to be awarded.
But isn't that really just saying that her findings were insufficient? I mean, she had jurisdiction to award attorney fees, at least in one circumstance. And the parties delegated to the arbitrator the determination of whether to award attorney fees.
Well, I think we've got a couple of different, if I'm understanding your question, we have a couple of different questions there. There was a stipulation that the party said, you know, to the extent necessary, the arbitrator would be able to consider attorney's fees after the after the initial proceeding. So yes, the parties did have that agreement. That did not give the arbitrator, that agreement did not expand the scope of the arbitration agreement requiring egregious conduct. It did not give her any type of additional discretion or authority.
Right with the arbitration agreement, paragraph 19, it delegates to the arbitrator the authority to award attorney fees in appropriate instances. And you're saying the one and only appropriate instance under your interpretation of the contract is upon a showing of egregious circumstances.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, couldn't the arbitrator have the power to construe the contract, the arbitration agreement, right?
The arbitrator does have the power to construe the contract.
And what if the arbitrator said, I construe egregious to mean, per se, if there's a CCPA violation, I deem that to be egregious. What if she said that? Would that be...
That may have been a different story, but she did not do that. And you cannot make the assumption that she made, that there was the showing required to award attorney's fees under that provision of the contract. She did not do that, and the parties urged her to do so in those post-arbitration pleadings.
If I can jump ahead on you, Ms. Bocconi, you were just saying, and I'm sympathetic to your argument, frankly, that you can't assume she found egregious conduct. You seem on the kind of last part where the other side asked for a remand, you want us to assume the opposite, that she rejected it because they asked and she said nothing about it. Why shouldn't we, that assuming we buy your argument that the court was wrong on CCPA, why don't we have to remand for clarification from the arbitrator as to whether she intended to reject egregious conduct? Because it seems to me, other than that, we have to read her mind.
Well, a remand here is not necessarily a remand might be appropriate, but not to the arbitrator. The remand should be appropriate because this court needs to look to the interpretation of the contract and needs to look to the record before it with regard to what the arbitrator did. And in this instance, she acted outside the bounds of the agreement by making the award of attorney's fees pursuant to a statutory provision and not pursuant to the agreement.
Sure, but you would have us reverse on the fee issue because she awarded outside the agreement under the CCPA. But she clearly intended to award fees. The record is fairly limited, and certainly we have no transcripts of the arbitration. It's not clear to me that she necessarily rejected egregious conduct. She just made no finding on it at all. And why wouldn't we remand to her for that? Again, if we agree with you on the CCPA, I don't want to prejudge the issue. Why wouldn't we remand to the arbitrator to tell us, egregious conduct, yes or no? You need to make the finding.
She had the opportunity to do that. She had the opportunity to do that in the July award. The parties urged her to do so, and she did not do so. And so that is why this court can look to the record before it and make the determination based upon the interpretation of the contract.
One other question. I'm cutting into your rebuttal time, I know, but maybe we'll give you one more minute if the presiding judge is generous because we've monopolized your time. But on the issue, Judge Gabriel's first question, on who decides, didn't the parties bargain for the arbitrator to interpret the contract? Container Technology, the Coors Brewing case, Giraldi, I think your colleagues cite, isn't just because the arbitrator misconstrued a contract, that's not a basis for setting aside award, is it?
Yes, it is. This court has de novo review of the interpretation of the contract. And the basis here to set aside the award is that the arbitrator exceeded her powers under the agreement. Her powers derive from that agreement and are limited by that agreement.
So misconstruing a contract equals exceeding jurisdiction?
I don't think, no, I think misconstruing a contract is not what we're suggesting she did. What she did is she awarded attorney's fees outside the bounds of that contract by awarding fees based upon the CCPA, as opposed to what was required in paragraph 19 of egregious conduct. I haven't had an opportunity to discuss the issue of prejudgment interest. I have about 2 minutes left. I am going to save that for rebuttal, and if I have about 30 seconds of my few minutes, I will get to the prejudgment interest issue. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Alan Epstein representing the homeowner plaintiffs. With me at council table are Mark Nelson and Colleen Nelson. The first issue that defendant raises is whether the arbitrator exceeded her authority in awarding plaintiffs attorney fees and costs as damages under the Consumer Protection Act. The agreement, arbitration agreement, provided that the parties would arbitrate all disputes incidental to this sales agreement or the transaction which is the subject of the sales agreement. The agreement then states, the cost of the arbitration shall be paid equally, but each party shall pay its own fees, provided, however, upon a showing of egregious conduct, the arbitrator may award reasonable attorney fees. And Village Homes argues that this provision precluded the arbitrator from awarding plaintiffs attorney fees and costs as damages under the Consumer Protection Act. And this argument is without merit for several reasons. First, the language only contractually articulated the American rule that parties generally have to pay their own fees, whether they win or lose. It also provided an exception for egregious conduct. It did not purport to preclude a statutory award of attorney fees. It said nothing about such a potential award, and it didn't contemplate that such an award. It was directed to claims incidental to the contract.
Mr. Epstein, you would agree, wouldn't you, that parties are free to contract even to the extent of excluding the coverage of a particular statute?
Well, certainly they are, unless the statute itself prohibits contracting away those rights. But my argument is that they did not do so in this case.
Well, what should they have done, Mr. Epstein? And you know, let me back up, because I would like your answer to the same question I started with Ms. Piccone. Do you agree that we, as a court, do a de novo review of the arbitration agreement here?
You do have a de novo review of the of contractual language, the appellate court does. But the arbitrator does not exceed her authority or jurisdiction by misinterpreting an agreement. Well, so she had I'm not sure whether that's a distinction without a difference or not. But that's what the case law says, is that the arbitrator does not exceed her authority if she misinterprets the law.
So here, would we be within bounds, and this is hypothetical because I know you'll disagree with the question, but we would be within our bounds if hypothetically we were to say we find this arbitration provision unambiguous, and the only time the arbitrator could award fees was if the conduct was egregious, and she didn't find it egregious here. We could, as a court, make that finding.
I think so. There is a case that says that if the arbitrator is mandated by the contract to award fees, then she exceeds her authority by not doing so.
Right. And that was, I think, Chief Judge Davidson's case, as I recall. I remember that you cited that. What I was going to ask you now on the merits is what were the parties here to do in terms of, it seems to me, or well, I'll pose this as a statement and ask you to rebut it. The parties here, one could easily say, they tried to limit exposure to fees on both sides. We're concerned about fees, and therefore, the only time anyone's going to get fees is if egregious conduct. No qualifications, period. One could read the provision to be an unambiguous statement, whether it's under the statute, the rule, any other way. Fees is fees, and this is the only time we're going to award fees.
Well,
why, and you would have us, I think, say the party should have figured out, except if it's in this statute, that statute, or whatever. It seems to me the parties took a very broad approach to say any fees, only egregious. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, had the agreement said nothing about fees, the parties would be in the exact same position they were in with that provision in there, because parties have to pay their own fees. So the written agreement simply reflected the American rule.
But and didn't they set a standard for, I mean, you've said that a couple of times. It seems to me it doesn't reflect the American rule, because they set a bar. It's each party has to pay the fees unless it's egregious.
Well, actually,
so the bar is egregious.
It gave more rights than the American rule, because, well, it gave more rights than the American rule, because it allowed for fees in the event of egregious conduct. But it didn't waive fees under any and all circumstances if they were if they were damages.
But it gave less rights than the CCPA, didn't it?
I'm sorry?
It gave less rights than the CCPA, because CCPA says nothing about egregious. CCPA is an automatic entitlement to fees, isn't it?
Yes.
So it kind of in between the American rule and the CCPA. Was that a fair description of what it did?
I think it may be apples and oranges, but yeah, I guess so. But the arbitration agreement in context is talking about fees, attorney fees, as an element of costs. Fees can be, attorney fees are either costs or they are damages. And they are damages, they are the only damages in the context of abusive process or where the defendant embroils the plaintiff in litigation, and that's a bad faith claim, something like that. In Wong v. Montero Holmes, this court held that attorney fees awardable under CRS 61113-2B of the Consumer Protection Act, they are damages, not costs. The agreement, in context, is characterizing attorney fees as an element of costs.
Well, but I was a little, frankly, puzzled by your cite to Wong, Mr. Epstein, because as I read Wong, as I recall it, it had to do with an insurance provision that says the insurer has to pay the costs. And the court said, well, you can construe attorney's fees any which way you want, but it wasn't that case really focused on what the insurance provision meant. I guess I don't find it to say fees are damages under the CCPA, as you say.
Well,
maybe I missed it.
I don't have the case in front of me, but my reading of Wong at 129 Pacific 3rd, 1037-38, I think it specifically said that attorney fees are damages under the CCPA and distinguish them from costs.
You just said a moment ago that in paragraph 19, fees were intended as cost, I'm paraphrasing you. You said fees are costs, not damages under paragraph 19 of the arbitration agreement. What language are you looking at?
I'm in context. The statement, the provision says the parties pay their own costs except that there's no entitlement to attorney fees. My reading of that sentence is that attorney fees are contemplated as a type of cost. Certainly, it's not referring to them as damages. The agreement language is not referring to attorney fees as damages.
But I guess I don't have the CCPA language, but it's fairly similar to the language in the CCPA, which says it shows damages. Prevailing party gets fees and costs. I'm not tracking with you, and I apologize.
Well, the term attorney fees is the same whether they are considered costs or damages, but they are considered damages under the CCPA, and my reading of the arbitration agreement is that the agreement is characterizing attorney fees as a component of costs, not as an element of damages. And as you suggested earlier, if the only damages were attorney fees, then it would turn the arbitration agreement on its head to interpret the term attorney fees as damages as well, because there wouldn't be any damages. With respect to the remand issue, I agree that this court may be able to interpret the judge's order as awarding, certainly having jurisdiction to award fees under the agreement's egregious conduct language. However, in no event can this award be reversed and vacated. The judge did not find that there was no egregious conduct. This, when an arbitrator fails to address an issue, remand is the appropriate is the appropriate procedural remedy. The judge was not finding that, that Village Homes' conduct was not egregious. She was simply awarding fees specifically in her written order under an alternative basis.
Excuse me for interrupting you, sir. You're on a point that I'm concerned about, and that is, while it is so that you can have a remand where an arbitrator does not address a particular issue or a particular finding that it has to make, in this case, the contract does not require that the arbitrator make a reasoned written opinion, does it?
No.
And I don't mean to be facetious, but arbitrations are arbitrary. Arbitrators can they can tell you who wins and who loses, and they're not necessarily subject to scrutiny about how they arrived at the decision. So I'm at a loss, I think, in finding my way to a point where I have to assume here that the arbitrator did not consider this conduct to be egregious. She doesn't have to make a written finding, does she?
I think silence doesn't imply that she was not finding that that the conduct was not egregious. She found that the defendant committed fraud. If anything, that suggests exactly the opposite. And often arbitrators or trial judges will have several alternative bases on which to render a decision and will only address one because they don't have to go on to the next one. This court remands all the, when a trial judge makes an award under one theory of liability and doesn't address another theory of liability, this court will also will remand and says I'm not reaching that claim because I don't have to. This court will, if it reverses, remand for a determination of whether there's liability under the alternative claim. And I analogize this situation to that scenario.
So here, Mr. Epstein, I'll pick up on a question Judge Connolly asked Ms. Bocconi. If I think you would say if the arbitrator said nothing, just I award fees, period, probably okay, because arbitrator can do that. The problem, I guess, is that the arbitrator specifically said, I'm awarding fees under the CCPA, and their argument is, didn't have authority. I know you disagree. But would you agree with that? The issue here is maybe the arbitrator said too much with respect to Judge Graham's question.
I think she said something specific about the CCPA, but there's no implication that she would not have found egregious conduct had she reached that issue. The implication is I don't need to go there because I can award attorney fees as damages under the CCPA. But if this court disagrees, the only procedural alternative is to remand to her to make that determination. With respect to prejudgment interest, under the Grand County Custom Home Building case, prejudgment interest is considered an element of damages. Therefore, because the plaintiffs requested it and the party stipulated that it would be addressed at a further proceeding, there was no finality until the arbitrator made an award of prejudgment interest. Under 13 CRS 13-22-220, an arbitrator may change an award under subsection 1B if the arbitrator has not yet made a final award, which she hadn't because prejudgment interest had not been addressed, or under subsection 1C of that statute, the arbitrator can clarify an award, and she could do so. She could under either of those provisions, she could make an award of prejudgment interest. Finally, plaintiffs are entitled, if this court affirms the award of attorney fees under the CCPA, to an award of attorney fees and costs for defending that judgment on appeal. Plaintiffs request that the court affirm the arbitrator's award and remand for an award of fees and costs on appeal. Alternatively, plaintiffs request that the court remand for a determination under the egregious conduct language of the agreement. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Epstein. You've got about 2 minutes, Ms. McKay.
Thank you. The arbitrator acted outside of the scope of the agreement in a couple of places here. First, she awarded all the costs to be awarded to the homeowners. The agreement provided that each side were to bear their own costs. The other issue is there is nothing in the agreement that distinguishes between costs and attorney's fees. Attorney's fees are attorney's fees, and the agreement is clear whether they're classified as damages or as costs. The conduct required was that of egregious conduct. She did not make the award under that. She made the award under the CCPA, and here the parties decided before they entered into this contract how that contract was going to be resolved, how that dispute was going to be resolved, should there be a dispute. And the party said, okay, we're paying our own fees unless there's egregious conduct. There wasn't egregious conduct. She acted outside the scope of the arbitration agreement, and therefore the award should not have been confirmed by the trial court. With regard to prejudgment interest, and I apologize for speaking so quickly, the only point I would like to make there is that the parties did not reserve the right for the arbitrator to go back and change her award to award prejudgment interest. The stipulation that they entered into was before the May award, and it said to the extent necessary, which suggests that the arbitrator, had she made a finding, she could then go back and make a determination as to perhaps the amount. That May award discussed who won, who lost, on what claims, and she addressed all of the categories of relief in that May award. There is not one word of prejudgment interest regarding prejudgment interest award.
Is it your view, Ms. Piccone, that even though the party stipulated that if need be, they'll address prejudgment interest and fees after the fact, the arbitrator had to say, just remind everyone, we're going to take up prejudgment interest when she issued the May award?
She had to make that award. That award was final and definite in every respect in May. She could not then go back and award prejudgment interest. She obviously felt there was something wrong about doing that because she had to justify in her July award why she was going back and doing that. That stipulation did not. It was just to the extent necessary, subsequent proceedings would be had, but she did not make the award in the May. And I am out of time. I just ask that you reverse the orders and judgment as stated in our brief. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Piccone. And thank you, Mr. Epstein. Thanks to both counsel for your good arguments. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course. We'll take up the